Hello and welcome to The Shape of Work, a podcast series by SpringWorks. My name is Anoop and I am your host. Each week, we'll be talking to top people managers across the world on the future of work and how it's shaping our workplace. So sit back and get ready to find out more from these movers and shakers as we have a no-holds-barred, anything-goes conversation with them about their journey, their insights, their thoughts, and most importantly, their ideas and vision for the workplace of the future. Join in on the conversation, leave a comment, and don't forget to hit that subscribe button.
Today in this episode of the Shape of Work podcast, we have, I think, one of the coolest Web3 founders out there in India, probably, Madhavan Malonan, CEO and co-founder of Questbook. He has been in the software space for a good amount of years, and then he moved into the Web3 space. He's been very active in all socials. Yeah, he's been great. So, hi, Madhavan. Happy to have you here.
Aditya, great to be here. Thank you for that kind introduction. Being the coolest Web3 developer or Web3 entrepreneur in this space is not as big a compliment as it may sound because, well, yeah, there are just a few developers and builders in this space in the first place. But yeah, anyways, thank you for that kind introduction.
Yeah, so sure, let's start from your journey. Like, how did it happen? You know, you were in the software space, like Go software space from in Microsoft, and then you're currently, you know, founding a great company. So how is the journey been? Like, you know, if you could give a brief.
For sure. It's definitely been a long journey. Yeah. I went to IIIT Hyderabad, did my computer science there, and went on to work with Microsoft. Like, towards the end of my college days is when I was kind of first exposed to Bitcoin. I tried reading something about Bitcoin, never understood it. But like, yeah, I was at least aware about its existence in college, but I was continuously like reading about it on and off. When I joined Microsoft with the first salary, I bought myself some Bitcoins.
Oh, wow.
Right? So this is in 2014. And it was like really, really hard to be honest. Yeah. Like, I don't think WazirX or all these exchanges were, yeah, or I don't know if they existed, but like at least they were not in my my know-how. So the way for me to do it was actually find somebody on the internet, send them money via PayPal, and pray that they send me Bitcoin. That's really how the system looked back then.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was like my entry into crypto. Like, right, that was my first step. Over the next few years, of course, I worked with Microsoft, went on to work with Abhilash, who's also my co-founder now, on a product called Samosa that grew to over 10 million users. Wow. But all this while, I was still like dabbling around in crypto. My real exposure to crypto was this big fight, right, in between Ethereum and Bitcoin, and eventually Ethereum came out of it. So that news and that hangama kind of attracted my attention, and that's when I started following it more closely. And fast forward to somewhere around 2016-2017, there's this research project that was going around in Ethereum called the Plasma Network.
Okay,
right? So something called the minimum viable plasma, a specification had been put out by Vitalik. And I got like really involved in that research forum. I used to participate regularly in the forums, in the community calls and stuff like that. So I got to learn from very, very idealistic people, right, in Ethereum.
Yeah.
So yes, that kind of was an eye-opener for me and had a great experience there. This was in the bear market, right? Like, the 2017 bubble, ICO bubble had kind of crashed. And the only people who remained were like people who were really serious about it. So all of those community calls were like always like high quality. Yeah. So I was very lucky to get involved over there. Yeah. In the next two, three years, I was just building products in crypto. As history might have it, none of them worked. But somewhere in 2019, 2020, I reached back to Avilash saying, hey, Avilash, why don't you come and let's build something in crypto. And I basically, the thing that converted him to be interested in this is I called him up and said, Kibos, look, 90% of my net worth is in crypto. I'm not fooling around. Yeah. So that's something that's really happening over here. And that's when he said, okay, let me take a stab at it. And during that journey, something struck both of us. Like, Avilash is one of the smartest developers I know, and he kind of had a tough time in like getting onboarded into crypto, like to learn about the technology, learn about how to code stuff, how to build dApps. Yeah. So that brought us to the realization, hey, if Abhilash is having such a tough time, imagine what the rest of the world is going through. Right. So that's when we thought, hey, there's a huge problem because of which new developers are not able to come into crypto. And that's when we decided we need to solve this problem. We launched Questbook just specifically for crypto developers. We created almost 100 tutorials, put it up on GitHub completely free of cost so that people can come learn from it at their own pace. And yeah, we built out a Discord community, which is now pretty vibrant over the last two and a half.
Yes.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. So you'd know, you'd know.
Actively participating in the community chat, etc. Yes. Yeah.
Super. So yeah, that's a community that I'm super, super proud of. So Harsha, one of our co-founders, like spends almost all day, like 16, 17 hours every day just on Discord. So that's something that's really worked out for us over the last 2 months. We've grown that to about 12,000-13,000 strong community. So yeah, I think that's been like my entire life purely from a crypto lens.
Yes,
there are a lot
from the community side of it, I think you have created a very nice community. I see the people who are in it, they are so enthusiastic about the whole thing, and they are actively participating in different things, you know, all these tutorials, etc. So you know, were you how that idea came up that, you know, you want to build a community in Discord? Like, you know, Discord is the go-to place for any crypto community. So how did that idea come up when you were just starting out?
It was actually a no-brainer. Like, I don't even remember if we ever had a discussion around this, right? Like, we are here building a crypto company, right? Like, we are helping developers transition from Web2 to Web3. And we're also building this company from a very Web3 perspective in the form of like keeping it open, community first, complete decentralization in the works, you know, incentive alignment. So all of these things are like part of the company. And it's part of any crypto company or a crypto project, right? So building a community was a no-brainer. And building it on Discord was also a no-brainer because that's where like all the action is. That's where all the people are. And then we need to adapt to wherever people are. That said, we were not well-equipped to handle this in the sense, of course, Harsha has been dabbling around with Discord in the past. But my experience with Discord has purely been from just being a participant in other communities.
Yeah.
So I had never run a community before. Nobody had run a community.
Yes.
So yeah, we had to figure out, okay, how do we build this community? But yeah, that's something that we figured out. Happy to dive deeper into that as well. But yeah, I'll take a pause here for your consideration.
Sure. Do you think, you know, you started, I think, you know, from at least the timeline, you started Questbook officially in 2019, if I'm not wrong?
No. Questbook launched in April or May this year.
Okay.
So there was a product called Creator OS that launched in 2020. That's the, you know, still the parent company of Questbook. And we were in the business of education more broadly, not just specific to crypto education,
but
we kind of made that pivot to only crypto somewhere in April, May this year. And that's when we rebranded it to Questbook.
Got it. Do you think all the users require a mindset change when it comes to Web2 and Web3? Like, you know, like how do
for
you
sure,
sell this?
For sure. The biggest problem right now in the space is the awareness. Now crypto, Bitcoin and all is like still fairly well known. Like you see those ads every day, but you still don't know that, hey, you can actually build on top of it, right? So even my really smart friends from like the top companies, like Google, Facebook, all of these people also have not even considered the possibility of like developing on top of crypto because they didn't know that it's a thing. Yeah. So right now, a huge problem is that people are just not aware, right? They're not aware of this new technology. I think that is the lowest hanging fruit for us to solve. And of course, you're also right. Even if once you do decide to come into development on crypto, it's a major mindset shift, right? In the sense that you have to think community first. You need to think money first. You need to think economics first. These are things that you need not have to do in the Web2 world as a, let's say, an app developer. Right? You didn't have to do it. Backend developer did not have to do it. But now you have to think about building a business into the product.
Yes. Coming to that particular thing, no, Web2 is very centralized when it comes to its business model, right? But in Web3, we have to, basically, the principle is that whoever is part of this community has to get some incentives, right? So what's the strategy there, apart from the education, obviously? Do you have anything in plans where you have to give some incentive to the community members also in future or right now?
For sure. 100%, right? Like, if you don't have incentives, if you do not have a economic model, all of this is unsustainable. So yeah, for sure, we have a economic model. Happy to brief it over here. It's pretty simple, right? Like, now, once you upscale yourself into a Web3 developer, now there are a lot of these opportunities that open up. Because a lot of these projects have things that require to be done. A lot of them have bug bounties. A lot of them want dApps built on top of the protocol. Some people are hiring, whatever. So there are all of these opportunities that exist for developers in the ecosystem. And we are in the business of enabling those opportunities. Basically, we become that opportunity marketplace for developers who are upskilled in crypto, upskilled in Web3. Most of our crypto economics revolves around enabling these opportunities in such a way that all these stakeholders are appropriately incentivized. I think that's a little too technical for us to dive deeper into on this podcast, but happy to do a separate one just on the crypto economics. Super, super fascinating.
Yes. Yeah, I'm also dabbling in that for now. A lot of interesting things. And now, taking a bit backseat, I think from a high level, I think, you said you just basically launched in April, right? I think that's like a pandemic time, I'll say. Also, probably you are expanding. What I see that you do a lot of hiring also in the company. So what is the challenges that you face, while hiring for such a niche topic? If you could change something, what it would be from the usual hiring process that is followed by other companies?
I think we're uniquely placed to answer this question, right? Like, the biggest problem is, well, there are just not enough Web3 developers in the ecosystem for us to hire. And, well, we are solving it by building Facebook, I think. We are solving our own problem. In fact, it's a virtuous cycle, right? In fact, a couple of days back, I don't know if you noticed, we put out a tweet that kind of went viral on... we're willing to hire anybody who has done our quests without a technical interview, and we'll like 2x their existing salary. In fact, we made that hire like within 24 hours of making that post. We kind of solved that problem for ourselves that one single time, but how do we do this on a recurring basis is kind of definitely a challenge that we have. Like, we just don't have enough Web3 developers in the world from where we can hire in the first place.
Got it. That's nice. I think the Questbook, whatever I dabbled into the exercise stuff, it's more concentrated to devs. But in a company that wants to get into the Web3, like the Chingari and all this phone that is trying to get into Web3, do you think even the management or who is someone who is not into the development, they should also be taught in some way about Web3 and development, or probably some no code tool that could help them have faster adoption? Any
for sure. Look, everybody needs to learn about a new technology whenever it's coming about, no question about it. But I think at this point in time, we need the developers to first learn about this technology. Right. I think that itself is a distant dream at this point. Like, if Questbook were not to exist, probably we are going to be in a similar situation for the next few years. and new technology will never get built. Like no code and related technologies, maybe. I don't know what it looks like in the crypto world in the first place. But what is more important is, do we even have developers? Like if a developer does not know about a new technology, I do not expect somebody else to know about that technology. Like first adopters of a technology are likely to be technologists themselves, right? Developers.
Yeah.
So I think we have a bigger problem or a more pressing problem to solve right now. That is like, please get the developers to understand this space. And then of course, there will be more people who are definitely required, like the people who are running companies, product managers, designers, all of them need to exist. I'm not denying it. And I'm also not denying that this might not be a good time to enter this market. It's a great time if you're a designer, if you're a product manager, it's a great time to enter the market. But we as a company, as a team, need to pick our battles, right? We pick the battle of upskilling developers. I think that is a more pressing problem, in my opinion. More importantly, we as a team are uniquely placed to solve this, being like engineers at Microsoft, Google, Facebook ourselves, and being engineers in this ecosystem for the last few years. I think we are well placed to actually solve this problem.
Great, great. Even I see that you do all these events across India, I think. It's very interesting. I don't know if you had one in Bangalore, but I see one in Indore. I see one in Goa happening soon. So yeah, what's the thing there? Like, you know, it's pretty interesting in that way.
Yeah, we of course did our first event in Bangalore. It was really cool. So that's why we even decided to do it in the other cities. Yeah. Look, it's all about building together, building as a community. I think we've got to use whatever weaponry we have in our arsenal to build that community, right? Like whether it be Discord for online events, or if it is going to be physical meetups that excites more developers to join the bandwagon, we're going to do offline events. And if it needs us to do something else, we'll do that. But whatever it takes to spread this awareness to more and more people so that they jump ship into becoming developers also in Web3, I think we're going to do all of them.
Got it. And what is your thoughts on the DAO trend that is happening in India as well as the world? I think there's so many DAOs out there, you know, doing a similar strategy of hiring. They give you task and, you know, you just directly get hired into the DAO. And even I was watching a Solana event, I think, Tanmay Bhatt, everyone is getting into that space. They have their own DAO right now. So yeah, what is a DAO like for the general audience? What is DAO, and you know, what is its potential and where it's heading to? Any thoughts on that?
For sure. Look, a DAO at a very fundamental level is a decentralized decision making.
Yeah.
Right? Like how do you remove decision making from a single person and redistribute it to more people? So basically, what it usually turns out to be is something like a democracy, in which you kind of like vote to get some decisions made. So that's at a very fundamental level. Like if you were to run an open source project and you want to make some decisions, the only way to take those decisions is by voting on it. Cool. So that's like the fundamental of a DAO. Now, when a DAO really becomes interesting is when the economic incentives are designed in such a way that the DAO always grows. Right. Yeah. So the description that I just gave you, that is like, hey, all the decisions are made through voting as against, let's say, Facebook, in which Zuckerberg just calls the shots. Right. Yeah. So Zuckerberg is likely to move faster.
Yeah.
Right. In this competition. Because like decision making is just faster when it's a single person making high conviction bets. However, now the challenge for most of the DAOs out there is how do you design the economic incentives in such a way that you actually get speed, not just decentralization? How do you, if there is a value that the DAO is bringing to the world, how do you spread it more evenly? How do you spread it faster? Is a question that remains to be answered by most of the DAOs. Yeah. And I think the work that is going on right now is to figure out, hey, how do you align incentives of everybody in the community so that everybody in the community is working in such a way that it helps the entire project, entire company to actually grow faster.
Got it. Nice, nice points. I think DAO is like basically how every company should be. Probably like, you know, you said the word, right? You know, DAO is basically democracy. That's how everything works, right? Every democratic country also functions in a way that everyone votes and the decisions are made by the voters. And then, you know, like whoever votes for something more and they get to. So
for sure. It's just to clarify, I don't think that DAO is how every company should operate. There are only some kind of companies in which no crypto economic incentives actually exist, which makes sense to DAO EFI, if I may use that word. There are a lot of companies that might just benefit from not being decentralized.
Sure. So I was, again, I'll quote that event that I have been going through, the Solana event. So now I was watching through the event and I saw that, you know, the guest or those who were speaking there, they didn't really use any technical words or anything of that sort. It was all, you know, they used few of the keywords, which were like, you know, decentralization, tokens, and then, you know, three, etc. But do you think, you know, when you're building something, you have to know, you know, how do you choose, let's say, this blockchain, I should build my product on this blockchain, you know, not Ethereum, on Solana or something of that sort. So how do you make those decisions? Or do you, you know, think in a first principle way and, you know, you try to solve a problem and then decide, okay, this blockchain probably solves that problem. So what's the strategy there when you're building something?
For sure. That's a good question, a question that we get a lot from our developers. Yeah. I think, look, every blockchain has its own advantages and disadvantages. So you need to like really pick depending on the use case that you are building for. So for example, yeah, there's something called the blockchain. In the blockchain space, there's a trilemma that exists that basically says, hey, there are only two out of three problems that you can always solve by choosing a particular blockchain. Now, which are the problems that you care more about? You need to make that choice. Right? So in some cases, you need more security. In some cases, you need faster transactions. So depending on those kind of decisions is how you would decide one blockchain over the other. If you want like very high security, you would probably go with Ethereum. If you want like really high transaction speeds, right now Solana seems to be doing well, Polygon seems to be doing well. If you want to build some gaming, Polygon seems to be having like really good support right now. So yeah, different use cases, different blockchains that might be more suitable. In fact, I would go on to say that if there's any dApp developer who is serious about their dApp, they should seriously consider launching their own blockchain or a version of it. Right. Every developer, every project will have their own set of use cases. It could be like something on top of an existing chain. So it could be an L2 chain, it could be an L3 chain, whatever. But there might be a lot of merit in considering this question very seriously. That is, hey, just build your own blockchain.
Yes. But what I see from all the socials and everywhere, right? Everyone is basically fighting on this blockchain is better, this coin is better, this blockchain, you know, this coin, it's all that is happening. Do you think a solution like a cross-chain products will have better future than, you know, having one specific blockchain? What do you think in that?
Yeah, I definitely think it's a multi-chain world. That there is likely to be one or two large winners. However, there will be a long chain, long tail of smaller blockchains as well. Like, especially when I'm making the claim that every project should have their own blockchain, like at a very high level.
Yeah.
Yeah, like all of those blockchains definitely cannot make it, right? Like they will not all replace Ethereum. So yeah, there is a lot of merit in thinking of the world to be a multi-chain future. And there might be a lot of merit in interoperability between these chains as well. But how exactly it will play out, I think only time will tell.
Sure. Cool. Yeah, that's pretty informative. Yeah, you have a .eth domain. What's your thoughts on ENS? Like, why did you take it? I think they recently had a ENS drop also, token drop. So, yeah, what's your thoughts on ENS? Why did you take .eth?
Why did I take ETS? Hey, look, ENS solved a fundamental problem.
Yeah.
And that is like sharing of addresses, right? Like on Ethereum, your addresses are pretty hard to remember or hard to type. So if I'm talking to you over coffee and if I want to share your Ethereum address or share my Ethereum address to you, I can't do it. I'll have to pull up my phone, probably copy it from some wallet and send it across to you. But rather, with an ENS, I can just say, hey, send me money at marvinmarvin.eth, right? And yeah, it's just an easier conversation to have. So that's the value proposition of ENS at a very fundamental level. And there are two things super interesting. Of course, that it's solved a very important problem in crypto. And the second is, of course, there are other people who've tried to do something similar, but the reason ENS kind of won is because the founders are very, very idealistic.
Yeah,
right. Even if you look at they're very non-greedy.
Yes.
Right. So if you look at the airdrops that ENS has done as against a lot of scam projects do it, you'll clearly see the difference that, hey, there's a lot of emphasis on community, a lot of emphasis on the people who are helping this project go forward. And the founders themselves are pretty non-greedy about it. And I think that is something. And they've always made such decisions. They've always made decisions that is in the favor of public good. And that is what has made ENS way more successful than any of its competing products. So, yeah, that's my take on ENS. It's a very idealistic product. And yeah, I don't know about the ENS token, but ENS as a project, I think, is going to be a fundamental layer in the crypto ecosystem.
Got it. I probably see that as, I think it's already happening. I think it's in few months or years, we'll have, ENS usernames. You log in everywhere with your ENS username and then, probably log in with...
It's already Google happening. Username. It's rather than 6 months. It's like in the past. Yeah. Already Got happening.
Cool. So, coming back to Questbook, what next? What do you think, let's say, 1 year, 2 year down the line, what next for Questbook?
So, look, now we have 15,000 people in our community, tops. How many developers in the world exist? 26 million. We have a gap to fill. Yeah. So, that's where all our effort is going to go. That's number one. Number two is there are a lot of these developers who are now upskilled in Web3. Like they came here, they learned, and they keep asking us the question, hey, what next? Yeah. So that's where we are now providing a lot of opportunities in the form of bounties, in the form of jobs, in the form of side gigs to all of these developers. So that is another place where we are laying our focus.
Got it. Nice. Also, what do you think about the Web3 and what next? Like, what do you think, all this NFT... currently the NFT trend is going on where it's sort of a digital art only. Where do you think this NFT and Web3 can go and impact? Like, what next for this space?
I think NFT is going to be really, really, really big. But it is not going to be big in the way that we are probably seeing it today. Today we are seeing NFTs like art, right? Like you said, like it's rare art, and it's primarily bought and sold for the reasons of being able to sell it further, which is not a bad cause. Like we've been doing it as a society for a really long time in the form of art, in the form of gold and stuff like that. So it's like okay, but that's not something that will reach a billion users. It's not something that's going to reach 7 billion people.
Yeah.
What is likely going to happen is NFTs become identities, right? Mm. What I mean by that is that there is this user on Twitter by the name Punk6529. We don't know anything about that person other than the fact that he or she is the owner of CryptoPunk and paid $1 million for it. That's the only information that we have. And that is enough for people to trust that person. Basically, that account went from like zero followers in May 2021 to I think almost 200,000 users following that account now. Right. Why? Because that's an identity that's already associated with the fact that CryptoPunks are expensive. So that's an identity that comes with an NFT. I think NFTs will become identities. There's going to be a credentialing layer that's going to be built on top of it. Basically, Aditya as a person is nothing but a collection of NFTs that includes something from SpringWorks, something from Questbook, something from whichever university you went to and stuff like that. All of that put together, that basket of NFTs becomes an identity of a person online. And that's just one more part to this is NFTs are program readable. What that means is every identity will be of the same specification. Right. Yeah. Whether it's you get a certificate from, let's say, Questbook versus you get a certificate from Harvard, both of them are similar in specification. So applications can build on can be built on top of this, in which they read across the board to kind of certify validity. And I think that is something that's super, super powerful in the sense that this is finally a programmable proof of ownership that kind of leads to identity is getting formed on the internet natively. I think that is something that's super, super powerful in the future. I think NFTs will go down that route after the speculation ends.
Very interesting. I think, I think even right now, it's going like just like how every new tech is progressing. I think it's in that path. You know, you just found one use case and then you just build on top of that until you find another use case. But yeah, I also believe that NFTs can replace identity. But one issue, if I try to be devil's advocate, is there was a recent post also in which people were saying, you know, you just mint your CV or resume as NFT and stuff. So, you know, in that case, what happened is the moment we tag identity with NFT, how do you preserve the privacy of it? Like, how do you, you know, what about the privacy concern that few people have when it comes to minting your credentials into a blockchain? How do you?
You don't. I think there are going to be use cases in crypto that are going to be fundamentally different. Like, you cannot bring in Web2 requirements of privacy and stuff like that and still force fit it, because it's fundamentally different. In fact, it's quite the opposite. All the data is by default public, by default open. So privacy as a core fundamental is kind of a non-issue at this point in time. So the kind of things that will come onto the blockchain are also likely to be stuff that are by design public information.
Nice. Cool. Yeah, that's interesting. I think I had a lot of questions. It was very nice having that discussion with you.
Thanks a lot for your time, Madhavan. I think we are at the end of our podcast. Yeah, personally, I feel Questbook is solving a very important problem. That is, you know, more people need to learn about Web3, not just from the technical point of view, but also the philosophical side of view. Yeah, I think it's a great product, and personally, I also use it. I think even our audience should, if they are interested in the whole Web3 and what it's trying to bring, they should check out Questbook. So, yeah. Thanks a lot for your time.